the bell, sucker.
This is Movie Fighters, the show where Chris Sims and I, Matt Wilson, we watch movies and we beat them up. And I was just trying to sing in tones similar to the dulcet tones of Mr. Jackie Chan. I'll never get there, but I can keep trying.
You there, boy?
Me?
What day is it?
Why, it's Chansmas Day, sir.
That's right, Cockney Matt Wilson. It's Chansmas in July. Our favorite holiday. Oh, the lights are on the tree. I'm watching them shine. You should be here with me. It's Chansmas Day.
I say, go get that Chinese zodiac in the window. The one is
the one as big as me? That's right. It's Chansmas in July. It's our favorite holiday. It's the tradition that we have here on Movie Fighters going back to 3 days ago when Matt and I were trying to remember what movie we said we were going to do for Movie Fighters. And I did remember just now. And we discovered there are two recent Jackie Chan movies that we have not seen on Netflix. So obviously that's what we're doing. Matt, do you remember the one that we said we were going to do and then forgot about?
I don't. I know that we had said we were going to do Skip Trace, the one with him and Johnny Knoxville, which will be our next episode. Because this episode, we are going to be watching and discussing Chinese Zodiac, the third movie in the, what I guess in the U.S. would be called the Operation Condor series.
Yeah, the Operation Condor series or the Armor of God series.
Armor of God, which is what it's known as in Hong Kong.
Yeah, here's the other one, and it's on Netflix, and it's a Jackie Chan movie. We totally said we were going to do Around the World in 80 Days.
Well, then we're going to do all three.
And yeah, like, we might have to have after the Boys of Summer, and the Boys of Summer are you, me, and Jackie Chan.
We're going to be Chan for the summer.
The official theme song.
Yeah. I mean, we finally embraced our true selves, right? We're just watching Jackie Chan movies. This is what this show is going to ultimately become, right?
I mean, look, it could and should. Let's say that. Here are the Jackie Chan movies currently available on Netflix, by the way. This is American Netflix, so Canadian and international Netflix might have things a little different. Young Tiger, which is a 1973 movie. Chinese Zodiac, which is what we're going to be watching today. Kung Fu Panda and Kung Fu Panda 3. Kung Fu Panda 2, not in sight. Yep. I'm guessing Jackie Chan is still on there.
I would suspect he's still in Kung Fu Panda 2.
Yeah, I mean, if he's in 1 and 3, one assumes. The Kung Fu Panda Holiday Special, Around the World in 80 Days, Legend of Drunken Master, a.k.a. Drunken Master 2, which, if you have not seen it, super rules.
Yeah, you gotta see that one.
Police Story Lockdown, which is a 2013 Jackie Chan movie that I think we've heard a little bit about.
That is another recent one that's on there, yeah.
Yeah, and then Skip Trace. So, Matt, we could do a solid 4 episodes.
Yeah, I think we're going to stick to stuff that's relatively recent. I know Around the World in 80 Days was what, like 99, 2000? But we're including it. No, it was
2004.
But what we're watching this time around is the 2012 movie Chinese Zodiac, which, Chris, I feel compelled to read you some trivia about.
Oh, okay. No, well, before we get into the trivia, Matt, have you heard anything about this movie? Are you a fan of Operation Condor and Operation Condor 2, The Armor of God, or, as they were properly released, Armor of God and Armor of God 2, Operation Condor?
Yeah, I've only seen the first one released in the United States, which is actually the second one.
Yes.
And I do like it. It's Jackie Chan National Treasure.
It's Jackie Chan as Indiana Jones.
Yeah, it's great. I think from a certain perspective, it's not entirely what you're looking for in a Jackie Chan movie. It's Jackie Chan trying to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
In like mid-career. Like, it's not as martial artsy as his other movies.
Well, the big stunt in Operation Condor is the fight in the wind tunnel.
Yeah.
Which is more, it's more action. It's more physical comedy than action.
Or at least action movie, not martial arts movie. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's part of that Jackie Chan transition from just a martial arts actor to a full-on action star, right? Because this was, the first one was like 86, right? It was not as late in his career as you might suspect.
No, it was pretty early. It was either late 80s, early 90s, I think. I mean, we can find out pretty easily.
It's 84. The first one, for Armor of God, was 84, and then Operation Condor was 91.
You know, if you look up Armor of God, it just takes you to Ephesians 6:11?
That makes sense.
No, 87 is what it says.
Well,
it's 86, then it says 87. Oh boy, oh boy.
Okay, so we're not sure what year Armor of God came out.
Yeah. That's anyway, the hard-hitting research that you come to find here on Movie Fighters.
Anyway, it was mid-80s. It's not as late career as you might think, but it still feels like Jackie trying to do something different in his career. After being in, you know, stuff like Drunken Master throughout the 70s and early 80s. Well, do you want to hear this trivia?
I would love to hear this trivia, Matt.
This is a Guinness World Record-breaking movie. Jackie Chan set a Guinness World Record for most credits in one movie.
Right, because he directed this one.
He had 15 credits.
Okay, can I guess?
I don't know all 15. I have a list of five.
Well, he's the star, obviously.
Yes.
He is the director.
He is the director.
I know for a fact he sings a song on the soundtrack.
He is not just a singer on the soundtrack. He is the composer of the score.
producer.
Yeah.
Stunts.
Fight choreographer. He choreographed the fights.
Did he write the screenplay?
Well, he has a writing credit, but he is one of four credited writers. And one of the four credited writers, Edward Tang, who wrote the other two Armor of God movies and several other Jackie Chan movies. This was his first screenplay in 15 years.
Okay, interesting.
Jackie Chan basically brought him out of retirement for this movie.
Hey, when JC calls.
When JC calls, you pick up, my man.
You pick up.
I'll look up some other credits that Jackie Chan has and just read them off to you. He has a cinematography credit.
Oh, has, okay, that's an interesting skill.
He has
that I didn't know Jackie Chan had.
He has the sole art direction credit.
Okay, interesting.
He is credited as a production manager.
What does a production manager do?
I don't know. He is credited in the art department as supplying props, being like in the prop department.
Okay, I think now things are just getting weird.
There's a long list of visual effects people. I don't see his name in there anywhere.
Of all the things for Jackie Chan to have the Guinness World Record for?
He's credited for lighting.
Okay, at that point they just had to be like, hey, let's see if we can get him in the books. Hey, Jackie, help out with the lights.
Also, catering coordinator.
No way. Okay, that's amazing.
Like, what kind of food do you think Jackie was getting for everybody on the set?
I'm going to say, like burritos.
I think you're definitely right. They went to the highest quality Hong Kong burrito place and had burritos. Also of note, some other trivia. Besides Jackie's Guinness World Record setting credits and that Edward Tang came out of retirement for this. In China, this is Jackie Chan's highest grossing box office film.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
This is his most popular movie in China. Now, in the United States, this movie, first of all, the version that we get, because I believe the version on Netflix is less than 2 hours. The version,
right, it's an hour 49.
Yeah, the version that was released in China was 2 hours and 3 minutes. Jackie Chan personally cut it down by about 15 minutes for the American release, and had every intention of releasing it not long after the release in China, but various business things delayed it, And then it was only released in one chain of theaters. It was only released in AMC theaters.
Really?
For reasons I do not understand.
Well, that makes sense why I didn't see it, because I was not living near an AMC theater at the time.
Yeah, I don't know why it was only released in AMC theaters, but so such was the case.
Matt, real quick, before we get to the plot, did you know that JJCC is a six-member South Korean hip-hop boy group formed under the management of Jackie Chan?
So he's like, not only is he Jackie Chan in Hong Kong, he's also the, what's that guy's name? Something Perlman, whoever the guy was that made the Backstreet Boys.
he's a real Colonel Tom Parker these days.
Now,
let's talk about ZZ12.
Yeah, let's talk about ZZ12. This is a movie about Asian Hawk, the character that Jackie Chan also played in the other Armor of God movies, trying to reclaim 12 priceless Chinese zodiac sculptures that were stolen from China in 1860. That is the plot of the movie. He's trying to recover these statues. The bad guy in this movie is Oliver Platt.
Oh, you know, Oliver Platt, one of Hollywood's greatest that guys.
Oh, one of the best that guys. But I can't, I don't even know what he's going to be as like an international thief of ancient statues.
Matt, what's your favorite Oliver Platt role? I mean, it's about to be ZZ12, I know.
Yes, we should note that even though this movie's called Chinese Zodiac here, and on Netflix, in China, it was released as ZZ12. Honestly, the Oliver Platt role that I think of now is the first season of Fargo.
He's legit
amazing in the first season of Fargo.
See, I know him as White House Counsel Oliver Babish in The West Wing.
Sure.
That's a top-notch Oliver Platt.
Interesting that we both went with TV roles.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what happens. That's what happens. The TV roles, you live with them longer. You get to know them a little better. I want you to guess, Chris.
He was Jimmy King in Ready to Rumble. Matt, does this make him a movie fighter's all-star?
He's got to be. I forgot that we talked about him at length in Ready to Rumble.
Oh, my God.
But he is definitely the old washed-up wrestler who gets brought back and ready to rumble.
Welcome to the Plattcast, everybody. I'm excited.
The Channon Platt Hour. Now, Chris, we made some jokes a minute ago about, you know, all of the filming of this movie taking place in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. But that is, in fact, not the case. This was a world-spanning shoot.
Okay. Like, not a work? It was a world-spanning shoot?
Sure, yeah.
I can feel the hate rolling off your voice for that bad, bad joke. All right, so tell me, where was this filmed? Hit me with some filming locations.
All right. There were scenes filmed in Hong Kong and Beijing.
Okay.
It also went to Taiwan, Paris, France.
Oh, okay.
Australia, and IMDb does not identify which part of Australia. Australia.
That is where JC makes his residence.
Oh, I didn't know he lived in Australia.
Yeah.
Okay. It filmed in Vanuatu.
Where's that?
It's an island republic. Oh. Okay. It's a small Pacific island. It's where a lot of like tropical movies get filmed.
Okay.
It was in Latvia. And Paris. So I assume that Jackie is going to be chasing Oliver Platt all around the world.
It's a real around the world in 80 days.
Chasing Oliver Platt.
I think that's enough background. Let's watch this movie. I have heard it's bad. I just want to throw that out here. As a Jackie Chan fan, as specifically an Operation Condor fan, that's a movie I think both of us have a lot of affection for. I remember asking, hey, is Chinese Zodiac any good? And hearing a resounding no. So we will see how it works out when we watch it.
I will say that Time Out Hong Kong gave the film 2 stars out of 5, calling it a pedestrian film by any measure aside from its action design.
That's rough.
Yeah, so we shall see. I will say that on the Netflix screenshots that you get, like the rolling, you know, 3 or 4 production stills that you get on Netflix, one of them is Jackie Chan's Street Lugeing.
Hell yes. About 10 years too late for that to be a big piece of the movie, but okay, let's do this.
Okay, well, before we watch the start of the movie, before we fire it up, it's time for the hottest segment in podcasting. You'll love to fight with something to eat. Sometimes it's savory, sometimes it's sweet. Snack, situation, what you snacking on? That's right, it's time for snack situation. Chris, what are you snacking on?
I am not currently snacking on anything, but I am snacking on the anticipation of Peach Crisp. My lovely wife is making in the kitchen as we speak. Because I told her, we were at the store today, and I was like, oh, I need to get something for snack situation. And she was like, I'll make a peach crisp. So that's what I got cooking.
A peach crisp for a peach Chris.
That's right, the original peach. Chris Sims. Matt, what are you snacking on? I bet I know, because we had to throw out a recording already.
Yeah, that's right. A pizza came to my door about 20 minutes ago, and I've let it cool, and I'm going to eat that pizza while we watch this movie, because this is a little later than our typical recording. It's more like dinner time. And
it is dinner time. But Aiden and I decided we were going to make our big meal of the day lunch today, so we had empanadas, which were very delicious.
It sounds very nice. I ordered a pizza, so I'm going to be eating that pizza while we watch Chinese Zodiac. Eating a pizza, drinking a Pepsi, classic Ninja Turtle moves.
Well, Matt, did you get like a paint me a word picture? Did you get a local pizza? Did you get a chain pizza? What's up? What's up, bro?
It's from my fave local pizza place, Favia's. A classic sausage and pepperoni, because I'm a classic man.
You are a classic man,
and I'm gonna chow down on that. So, with no further ado, we are going to pause. You are going to hear an ad and a musical interlude. You may go to Netflix and watch the movie with us, if you so choose. Either way, we're going to watch Chinese Zodiac, and then after that pause and musical interlude, we are going to come back and talk about it.
I have high hopes.
And we are back from watching CZ12, also known as Chinese Zodiac. And here's an interesting...
Also known as Armor of God 3.
Yes, here's an interesting tidbit of information about this movie. The Chinese Zodiac stuff, pretty much abandoned with like 40 minutes left in the movie.
It's in about 60% of the movie, I think. 60% of the movie is geared towards the plot that the movie is named after. Here's another cool fact about this movie, Matt. It kind of sucks.
That is true. But it is never boring.
It's not boring. It is incomprehensible. Here's the main problem. This movie is like watching 3 episodes of the Asian Hawk TV show that's kind of out of order. Because there's about 40 minutes of kick-ass movie in this, with a really cool villain and like a lot of like some really cool fights. This honest to God has one of my favorite Jackie Chan fights I think I've ever seen. Like honestly up there with the big brawl in the middle of Legend of Drunken Master, or the ladder fight in First Strike. Like the floor is lava fight is really good.
Yes, and it's not even like a to-the-death kind of fight. It's a weird, like, JC and his professional rival kind of fight, where they're just trying to show up each other.
Yeah.
So it
it's purely a fight that exists to be in a Jackie Chan movie where one guy says, I can kick your ass without getting up off this couch. And Jackie goes, show me. And then they fight and have like a good long fight scene that involves them never touching the floor, staying on the furniture. It's a fucking floor is lava fight. It's great.
Or at least if they do touch the floor, they have to keep some part of their body on the furniture.
Yeah.
It's real good. But that character that he fights, Vulture, first of all, we said that Jackie's playing Asian Hawk in this. But in the version we watched, he is never once referred to as Asian Hawk. Not one time.
Which is really weird because, like, Operation Condor and Armor of God both got American releases in the mid-90s. And it's been a while. It's been a hot minute. But it's not so long ago that, you know, you'd think they would have to be like, no, we can't acknowledge those other two movies that this is clearly a sequel to.
Yeah, like, he's always called JC. That is his character's name, JC. And I don't know if you watch this movie in Mandarin, you know, if it's gonna be Asian Hawk that he's called in the movie, but in this version, never once is he called Asian Hawk, but his rival is named Vulture.
Yeah, yeah. If you look this up on IMDb, he is listed as Asian Hawk, so I am almost 100% sure.
Netflix lists him as Asian Hawk also.
Yeah.
But Wikipedia calls him JC and calls him JC throughout the synopsis and everywhere else. So I don't know.
So here's the problem. Vulture, the kind of evil version of Asian Hawk, like the, you know, fucking Revolver Vulture or whatever his name is.
Revolver Ocelot.
Solid Vulture. He shows up and is introduced as the like a completely amoral version of Asian Hawk. Like at one point they talk about him like stealing a sacred relic for like a Buddha statue from a temple, and the people there believe that it's a neighboring country did it and there's a war going on. So he's this completely amoral war criminal, a great foil who's as good a fighter as JC is. That's the last 20 minutes of this 109-minute movie.
Maybe the last half hour, but like certainly Vulture, like Asian Hawk's professional rival, and big ups to Ala Safi. I hope I'm saying that name right. Who plays Vulture? He's super good.
It has like a really cool look in this movie,
and the screen time he gets. But like he is not introduced until the third act.
That dude was in Doctor Strange.
Huh. Okay.
I mean, he was like an extra, but he was in it, okay. You know?
He's real good, and I wish there had been more of him in the movie, because we talked about Oliver Platt being the bad guy in this. Oliver Platt maybe has, like, 10 lines.
Platt knocked his shit out in a day.
Yeah. Because he's basically in the same office throughout the movie, too, I think.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't...
He wears the same suit, for sure.
So, the movie starts with a big action sequence. JC and his team of thieves show up at this Russian military base, and the chyron on the screen is military base.
Military base. Brilliant.
Yeah, I don't even remember what they're there to steal.
I have no idea.
It doesn't really matter.
It's just a James Bond cold open.
Yeah, they show up at the military base. The Bonnie... The very acrobatic woman in his group of thieves.
Yeah.
Drives a sports car up to the front of the military base, stops it, and tells the guy at the gate of the military base, I have to pee-pee.
Yeah, she is going to say this about 5 times over the course of the movie.
It is their standard go-to scam. A pretty lady shows up somewhere and says she has to pee. And the men in this place let her in to ostensibly use the bathroom, but instead she, like, breaks in, opens a door, and steals some keys.
Yeah, and this is Zhang Lenshin is the name of the actress, and she is very, like, this movie is very clearly meant to be, she's gonna be the next big thing. Like, Jackie Chan clearly wants her to be a big thing, because her next few movies, she made her debut in CZ12. Her next movie is Police Story 2013, also a Jackie Chan movie. The following year, she was in Who Am I 2015, the sequel to a Jackie Chan movie. In 2016, she was in Skip Trace, a Jackie Chan movie.
There you go, and we're going to watch Skip Trace next, so we'll see her again.
Yeah. And her whole deal is that she's, like, super flexible.
Very agile. Like, she can do, like, splits and kick her leg up almost, you know, vertical. There's, like, a whole sequence where she's, like, kicking up and getting a set of keys and holding them on the heel of her shoe and taking them and then, like, doing a set of splits underneath a car to get underneath it and all that stuff.
Yeah, and she always has to pee-pee.
She always has to pee-pee. And so she does her part, and then JC, who is wearing a street luge suit with wheels on the front and back. Yes. It's got wheels on the front and back. It's got wheels all up and down the arms. It's got wheels on the legs. He gets whatever thing they're there to steal and escapes by luging. Apparently there's somewhere in Russia with that is all downhill, because he luges all the way down a road and out of there. And at one point there's like a half pipe thing that he gets up on the side of to avoid some spikes that are in the road.
They put down tire spikes, but they put them down where there is, like, a cobblestone half pipe that very clearly meets the road.
There's also a couple parts where he, like, will pull some guys off of motorcycles, kind of Metal Gear style. And instead of taking the motorcycle, he's very committed to the luge suit.
The luge suit is amazing. From what we can tell from the outtakes in the credits, like, it is, like, legit Jackie Chan in this weird suit made of rollerblades.
Not only, like, is it Jackie Chan in the luge suit, it's Jackie Chan being some of those Russian soldiers, too.
Yeah, doing their stunts. He's done that a couple times. There's a outtake from First Strike where he does that, too. But that scene is pretty dope, and it is, like, it's indescribably weird.
It's very weird, but as we were watching it, we were like, this is cool. And I made the comment, like, the movie might not ever get any better than this. And with the exception of that one fight, though, it doesn't really.
Yeah, it takes 90 minutes to get back to this level. The luge suit is pretty cool. He ends up, like, escaping through this, like, drainage culvert thing. That's very cool. And then he flies out and lands in a net being held aloft by a helicopter, and then gets a phone call from somebody who's like, hey, do you know about the bronze heads that are going to auction? And he goes, what? The Chinese Zodiac? And then the title comes up, and it's fucking amazing.
So once that happens, we are introduced to sort of everybody on the periphery of JC's operation. And at one point in this movie, I said, there are too many characters, and that is very true.
Yeah.
Because not only is there Oliver Platt, Oliver Platt also has these two sons, and we're introduced to one of his sons because he's at an auction, and he buys this set of stamps, this set of very rare misprinted stamps. You know, you've seen the ones that have the upside-down airplane on them.
Yeah. You've read comic books before.
Yeah. These have an upside-down boat on them. So they're clearly a take on the upside-down airplane stamps. And there's supposed to be only four of them in the entire world. So after he buys them at auction, he takes three of them and rips them in half and says, now there's just one. Look at that. Look what I did. I've increased the value of this one by however many times by destroying the other three, because we deal in rarity.
It has instantly tripled in value, he says.
Because the company that Oliver Platt owns, if it's instantly tripled in value, then he did an extremely dumb thing. Four of those fucking stamps.
He might have said it's instantly quadrupled in value, but I'm almost positive that he says instantly tripled.
Anyway, the company that Oliver Platt and his sons both work for is this place called, it's called MP Corporation. And what they do, what they specialize in, is gathering up these relics and artifacts from different cultures around the world and then reselling them at auction. And they do whatever they can to make the value of these artifacts as high as possible. There's a scene later in the movie where they're in, like, the MP headquarters, where they're dealing with all these things. And some things they'll make duplicates of because they don't actually exist anymore, and so they're just creating them out of whole cloth to make it look like they still exist. Some things, like things that are originals, they'll take them and cut them up into pieces so they can sell more pieces, or they'll take like these pieces of sheets of paper that are in different layers and separate the layers so there are more of those. Or if they're like old vases that are chipped or broken, they'll just create duplicate pieces to replace where they're broken and reconstruct them. All of this stuff.
Or they'll just fake it. Or they'll just make forgeries.
Yeah, they'll totally fake it. But
because, as we all know, 90% of all the relics on the market are fake. According to Jackie Chan, who says this as though it's like a fact that we need to know to understand the movie. That doesn't really come up that much.
So their entire business is based on the idea of sort of faked rare artifacts. They have JC and his team in their employ. He's stealing a bunch of stuff for them to sell at auction. And they are tasking him now with finding these 12 bronze heads of all the different animals in the Chinese zodiac, so they can resell them all at auction. And what Oliver Platt says, and we were trying to figure out what the fuck this meant. The bronze heads are all being auctioned for some, you know, number of million euros. I think he said 8 million euros. He offers JC 1 million euros per head to retrieve them. And then he says, and if you get them all, I'll add an extra zero on the end of that.
It took me a minute to realize what he was saying. He's saying if you get the dragon, I'll add an extra zero. So he's going to give him 10 million for the dragon, but there's still going to be a million each for the other ones. So, but it's phrased very weirdly.
So only the dragon is the one that he's going to get 10 million for.
Right.
Okay, because we find out later that the dragon's going to auction for like 60 million euros or something like that.
Yeah.
So apparently the dragon is more valuable than all the rest of them. After Oliver Platt tells JC and his team what he wants them to do next, we get this scene, like this expository scene that talks about how back during the Second Opium War, British and French soldiers went to the Old Summer Palace and cut the heads off of these 12 bronze statues. And that's what these heads are. And all the heads were taken back to Europe in 1860 and stolen from China. These are the heads that are being auctioned off and that are all the rage in the auctioning community now. JC finds out about a guy, a professor, in Paris who has 12 identical replicas of the heads. So he shows up at this guy's lab posing as a reporter for National Geographic named Martin with a camera.
Uh-huh.
To see what the heads look like and to scan them so they can know what they look like.
Yeah, and we get some real, like, Pierce Brosnan, James Bond shit in this where he, like, puts on gloves that he's going
to
use.
Well, first he's told that he can't take pictures. He's not allowed to take pictures of the heads. But he can touch them.
So he scans them with his gloves and then beams that information back to his crew, and they 3D print their own replicas based on this guy's replicas and, like, paint them so that they look normal. They end up throwing those into a river, and we have no idea why.
Yeah, like, this is where the movie starts turning into, and this I said this a few times while we were watching it. This is like when a 6 or 7 year old tries to tell you a story. it'll be like, okay, so he took the, he put on his gloves and he scanned the head of the thing, and they used a printer to make a new head that was just the same. But then they went to a bridge and they threw the heads off because they didn't need them. And then he went to this office, and there was a lady there, and her name was Coco. And they, like, want to keep the heads and take them back to China. And so they don't let him have pictures either. And Coco really wants the heads to go back to China because she likes artifacts and stuff. Under, like, when they're kind of lying to her and telling her he's from National Geographic, she sort of falls in with him and travels with him. And they go to an island. Like, this is how the plot of that movie...
And then Captain Jack Sparrow's there.
Yeah, this is how the plot of this movie moves along.
Yeah. So, JC meets these people who are protesting the auctions of the relics. Then there's another... There's, like, a rich French lady named Catherine.
Well, okay,
who has,
so they find out that...
It's very complicated.
They find out from Coco and her group that two of the heads are in a castle in Paris. So they infiltrate, or a mansion, I guess, not a castle. They infiltrate the mansion, and Jackie Chan solves a Resident Evil puzzle in a bookcase to open a safe and get those two heads. And I can't remember which two heads they are. But it's two of the Zodiac heads. He also notices while he's in the mansion a painting that they had tried to steal at one point. That is this small little painting of a bunch of roses, and they keep referring to it as the roses. So he steals that painting too, and then he just tries to walk out of the mansion, and he walks right by this security guy, and the guy's like, "Hey, what are you doing?"
Yeah, because the girl from the activism group is there. Then there's a weird scene where he's being chased by dogs through a hedge maze. It's like dream logic for about 40 minutes, honest to God.
And then he escapes the hedge maze because he has a thing on his back where if he runs fast enough, he can open a parachute on his back and fly.
Yeah, it becomes Just Cause for a minute.
JC, am I right?
JC, like, yeah.
Like, he's, like, flying over parts of the hedge maze, and he finally gets over the edge of the hedge maze and over a wall and goes out to the road, and then the Coco from the restoration organization comes out in her car. The security guys come out and see them together, and instead of chasing them, they just say, they were working together, and then they go back inside.
Well, yeah, and then they go to the police, and the police are like, hey, if nobody claims these in a month, you can have them, which I don't think is how telling someone that someone stole something from you works.
Well, okay, so the security guys from the mansion say, they stole these heads from us, and The police are like, no, they didn't, because we have a witness that says that these are theirs. And the witness turns out to be this lady named Catherine, who is a French lady who owns a castle, whose
ancestors... But the castle has been foreclosed on because they lost all their money in the housing crisis.
Right, so while the bank owns everything, her family, they're some of the people who went to China and stole these heads to begin with. I don't know why she shows up and saves JC and his group, or lies to the police. I don't understand why she was motivated to do that at all.
So they go with her, and she's talking about how all this stuff in her house has been foreclosed on, and it's owned by the bank, but all she really wants to do is go get her great-grandfather's bones, because he was on a ship that sank or ran aground, and then they figure out that it's got some of the heads on it, so they go to a pirate island. And it's literally like those two issues of Gen 13 that I like so much.
This was after an argument between Coco and Catherine, because they find, like, inside the house, an old, I think it's a Qing Dynasty calendar or some kind of wall hanging. Coco recognizes it immediately, and she, like, takes it and puts it in her pocket, and she's like, I'm taking this back to China. And Catherine's like, you can't. the bank owns that. I don't care. You could take it if you wanted to, but I can't give it to you because it's the bank's. And so they agree to go to this pirate island, and Catherine's like, look, you can take whatever you want. I just want my great-grandfather's bones back. So let's just go to this pirate island and try to find this boat.
What I would like you to do right now, dear listener, is pause this podcast and see if you can think to yourself what has transpired in the movie so far beyond an extended street luge sequence. Because all throughout this movie, I was like, Matt, there was luging, and now they're on a pirate island, and I'm not sure how we got there. So we have just recounted the events of this movie for you, and if you can, if you're still with us, then we are free to continue.
On the pirate island, JC and Catherine fall in a hole in the ground, and find the ship, the Indestructible. Also, somebody, is it Coco, or is it Bonnie who, like, dislocates her foot?
Coco breaks her foot. Or Coco okay. dislocates her foot, and Jackie has to, like, snap it back into place in this, like, weird, like, pantomime comedy scene. They also find that there are logs that have been crammed full of gold bars. We will later find out that it's 8 tons of gold bars.
In just one of the tree trunks. Just one
tree trunk. And there's multiple ones.
Yes. But they also find in the wreckage of the Indestructible, two more of the 12 bronze heads. They find a rooster head and a snake head.
So then the guys from the rich guy, Catherine's cousin's house, like the original rich guy that Jackie robbed and then got trapped in his hedge maze, his men show up wearing like Hawaiian shirts and try to like ambush them with guns. But then a bunch of pirates from Seven Nations, as they are weirdly and consistently referred to in the movie, they show up, and one of them is just straight up in Jack Sparrow cosplay.
And the rest of them might be in some kind of cosplay. They're wearing like very colorful costumes that would not look out of the ordinary at a comic book convention.
Yeah.
But the only one that's recognizable is Jack Sparrow. Also, we should note that the security guy shows up with, you know, a bunch of other guys in Hawaiian shirts, and they have guns, but they're not loaded.
Yeah.
He specifically told them not to load their guns.
Well, because they're all fucking amateurs, which I don't understand, because this super rich guy, they're the security for this super rich guy. There ends up being this weird three-way fight, kind of. Like, the French guys, like, mostly sit it out, but they're there.
Well, so it's between... they surrender immediately.
Yeah.
Which so it's must be a French joke, I don't know. But there's a couple of dodgy-ass jokes.
There's some real dodgy jokes, especially in this scene.
And this part of
like,
the
there's
movie.
A scene...
There's a part where the pirate who turns out to be able to speak Mandarin is... it happens to be black. And JC and his team seem real weirded out.
Yeah, they do this real broad take.
Yeah.
Like, what won't they think of next? That's kind of super uncomfortable.
There's also a whole thing with an RPG shot from a rocket launcher. And it accidentally goes off. And it, like, burns one of the pirates' face. And
I think he's holding the RPG and Jackie, like, grabs his hand and makes him shoot it against his will.
Could be. Anyway, the RPG goes into some vines, and then it becomes Chekhov's RPG, because those vines, after the fight finally kind of winds down, that vine ends up breaking, and the RPG comes swinging down, and the fight ends when the rocket-propelled grenade falls down in between... like, sort of in the DMZ between the two groups, and separates them.
Yeah.
And JC and his team end up being able to leave with Catherine's grandfather's bones, which she found, even though...
He has four femurs, by the way.
They beat up a guy with his bones. And she just makes a wild guess as to which skeleton is her grandfather. Because she finds her grandfather's signet ring... but there are two skeletons there, and she just kind of has to pick one. they make off with the bones, the two bronze heads, and they rig up this pulley system to try to get off the island with a tree trunk full of gold.
Oh, and there's a part where they notice that the ship's anchor is up in the trees, and they're like, wow, what's that huge anchor doing up there? And JC, in full broken Matt Hardy mode, goes, it's a very clever lever.
And they use that very clever lever to ride a log full of gold back to their boat. Their boat captained by a guy we have never seen before, who just shows up out of thin fucking air.
Yeah.
And then who never shows up again after that. He's just this weird captain guy who's there for a couple scenes.
Yep. So they end up escaping from those guys by all, like, kind of straddling this log full of gold and riding it down a hill after detonating the clever lever. And then it's a log. It's like a 150-year-old log full of gold. It floats. They just tie it to the boat and then sail off.
This is the most... I can't even begin to understand it. It is full of what they say is 8 tons of gold. They tie it to the back of the boat and it just floats behind them until
Matt, would you like to know how much 8 tons of gold is worth?
I'd love to know.
This is from the gold calculator at onlygold.com. 8 tons of gold is worth $287,709,760.
Wow, okay. So they're on this boat, they're pulling the log full of gold behind them.
Unless it's metric tons.
Okay, how much is it in metric tons?
Metric tons, it's 317 million.
Okay. They're pulling this log full of gold behind them, which is floating somehow. They have breakfast, and while they're having breakfast, JC is getting seasick. And Coco is like helping him out in his
They don't get seasick, they get drunk. Because they're celebrating.
Oh, is he... Well, maybe he's drunk and seasick.
Yeah, because remember, he... Like, at one point, they're celebrating that they have these 8 tons of gold. And Jackie takes 2 bottles of champagne and knocks the heads off the bottles. And just starts drinking. Like, shoot drinking from these broken champagne bottles.
It is the most dangerous way to open a champagne bottle.
It's the most dangerous thing I've ever seen Jackie Chan do, which is saying something.
Sure. Anyway, while Coco was looking after JC in his room, she found some of his documents and saw a picture, a photo, because there's something during the flashback to the 1860 raiding of the Old Summer Palace where a photographer took a picture of all these French and British guys holding up the 12 Zodiac heads. He has a copy of that photo. And also, there's a big box full of gold in the front of that photo, and he's just written a question mark on it. Like, hey, where's this gold? Yeah. So Coco finds this and realizes that JC and his team are not, they're not in this for altruistic goals. They're not in this to restore old artifacts and national treasures. They're stealing these bronze heads to sell them. So she confronts all of them about this and says, like, I won't have any part of this. I can't believe you guys are doing this. I thought I trusted you. As that argument is winding down, the gold remembers it's fucking gold and starts to sink.
Yeah. And they say, like, the only explanation they give for it suddenly sinking, and I don't know why they didn't bring it on fucking board. But
it would have sunk the boat. Like,
I don't think it would have sunk the boat. I don't think it would have sunk the boat. It definitely would not have floated a log. But the thing they say is, oh, it just soaked too long.
Wild. Wild.
Unbelievable. So this entire sequence, like, the discrete sequence of let's go to the pirate island, fight the pirates, escape with the gold, go, like, ride home on the boat, oh no, the gold's gone. That's basically like an Uncle Scrooge story. That's a Donald Duck story, basically. That's a distinct unit of storytelling that is just in this movie and has very little to do with anything else.
And when they get back to wherever the MP Corporation is headquartered, which I don't know if that's exactly established. Whenever they get back there, Paris. Is it still Paris? Okay.
I think so.
A whole new movie starts. Because a whole new set of inciting events occurs. We find out that this is like the third episode of the TV show. Because we find out that three more students, because there were two students who got beaten up earlier in the movie that worked for Coco's organization. Now, three more students have been captured by the MP Corporation, and one of them is Coco's brother.
Yeah, her brother that we didn't know she had.
And who we don't ever really see. Yeah. He's just one of the three people that gets kidnapped, and Coco's like, he's the most important. He's my entire family. He's the most important person in my life.
Also, there's two lines on Pirate Island. One where Simon, because JC's crew, there's JC, obviously. Bonnie is the flexible lady. There's Simon and David. And I feel like there's another guy.
Well, there's the captain guy.
There's the captain. Or but Simon and David.
It's JC, Bonnie, and the two guys. That's really his whole team.
So Simon mentions his wife being pregnant once. Bonnie talks about having a daughter, like, for two sentences, maybe.
And also, and Bonnie and Simon are apparently together. There's a lot of weird stuff happening in the background.
Bonnie and David are together?
Maybe. I don't know. I could never identify which one was Simon and which one was David.
Honestly, it's very difficult. But I think Simon's the one whose wife has a kid at the end of the movie.
Okay. There's some stuff going on in the background. This is the same problem we had with Robin B. Hood, where, like, there are too many subplots.
Yeah.
There are too many family subplots. Because
also, it's when they get back, Jackie starts, like on the boat, they have a conversation about, like, oh, we miss Valentine's Day, and now JC's wife is mad at him. And so there's a part where he's on the boat, and he's like, oh, come on, pick up the phone. I know you want to yell at me. And then when he gets back, he gets a phone call, and he, like, is going to take his wife out to dinner. And then he can't because he gets caught up in some situations. But it's like, I think it's supposed to be like, oh, yeah, you know, this is why these Tomb Raiders are likable people, because they have families too. But it's just weird.
It's very weird. And it, like, none of the subplots gets enough time to really land. Because we keep seeing stuff about Bonnie and I don't know if it's Simon or David. But whichever one she's with, they keep getting these notes from their daughter that say, like, Mom and Dad, please don't leave.
Mm-hmm.
But we only see those for like a second. And so none of it really gets to the opportunity to land. So the three students get kidnapped when they get back. Also, the team somehow finds out that the one bronze head that they were told, that JC was told that they were going to get more money for, the dragon, MP Corporation has actually had possession of it the whole time.
Which is, like, that makes no sense. Like, why would they say, like, oh, also, go look for this thing that will pay you 10 times what we're going to pay you for these other things, when they've got that? Why would you tell somebody to, like, why would you give them more of an incentive to look for the fake, to go on the wild goose chase than to go get the thing you actually want?
Because they want the other heads, which are still out there. So Oliver Platt promised JC more money for the one he knew he had. So he knew he wouldn't have to pay JC the 10 times more than he promised for the others.
Yeah, so it's a really weird. It's their motivations are all over the map.
Yes, so JC is mad at MP Corporation now, and Coco wants to get her brother back. So she begs JC to try to get her brother back. So they show up, JC and all his people show up at MP headquarters. And they have the roses painting with them. And they're going to try to barter because they know that Oliver Platt really wants that painting. They're going to try to barter.
Which, by the way, the roses painting is from like two plots ago.
Yes. They're going to try to barter with Oliver Platt and his son for the roses painting to get those kidnapped students back. So this has become a movie about kidnapped students, not Chinese Zodiac heads.
Yeah. So they go down underneath a vineyard that Oliver Platt owns, and it's fucking Blofeld's operation from You Only Live Twice. It's this massive art forging operation where they're doing all the stuff that we talked about earlier, but they've also got this giant, like, boiler that they say is designed to emulate carbon emissions, which I guess is to like, age things, right? But we really could not figure out how it was supposed to work.
I have not got the slightest fucking clue what that machine was supposed to be for.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what it's for. It's there to explode.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. The Wikipedia summary of this movie doesn't even bother to explain what the fuck it is. It just calls it a furnace.
Yeah, it is, like, literally there to explode.
There is some kind of explanation about it simulating carbon emissions. And the only thing I could figure was, like, it was going to make stuff seem older because of carbon dating, but that's not how fucking carbon dating works, so I don't know.
I think it's more like, I think it's just like simulating age.
I guess. That,
like, if it, you know, but it honestly, it doesn't matter. It's there to explode in like 5 minutes. So this is where we meet Vulture, and we already talked about him, and he has this kind of like, you know, sassy repartee with JC, and he has JC has brought Bonnie, and Vulture also has like a henchwoman with him.
Yeah, who I kept referring to as Vanessa Bear.
Yes, very funny.
Thank you.
Vanessa Bear would have been great in this movie, by the way.
She would have been great. So Jackie fights Vulture. Bonnie fights the henchwoman. The fight between the henchwoman and Bonnie is dope.
Yeah, it's really impressive because it's happening while Jackie is doing one of his, like, kind of standard Jackie Chan fight scenes where he's fighting like 5 nameless security guards. And then at the same time, Bonnie and the other henchwoman, who I don't think has a name.
I would suspect that her name is Katie. I'm looking at a cast list. It seems like she's probably Katie, but I don't know.
Katie might be the Australian woman doing an American accent in the activist group.
Possibly. I don't know.
Yeah. It's very tough to figure out. So Jackie is having kind of one of his standard fight scenes with multiple guys while they're just having a one-on-one that's really cool. And both of those fight scenes are actually pretty fun because it's Jackie fighting through all these different places where they're all the different forging apparatuses. So there's one where they're like taking pictures of like paintings with like a fake frame. And at one point he like jumps through the frame in a really cool way. And there's an outtake of that scene where it looks real sore. It's one of those where I was like, man, these are a lot less fun to watch with a 60-year-old Jackie Chan than they were with a 20-year-old Jackie Chan.
Update. Katie is definitely the henchwoman. That is a stunt woman and actress named Caitlin Deschelle, who also did stunts in Wonder Woman.
Oh, she's really good.
She's very good. And, so there's a part where Oliver Platt shows up, and he finds Vulture, and he tells Vulture, "Hey, why aren't you over there fighting JC?" And Vulture's like, "Oh, well, he's already fighting 5 guys. That, like, I can't jump into that. That would be a cowardly thing to do. This right over here, this is a fair fight." And he points over to Katie and Bonnie fighting each other.
Yeah,
as they're like sliding down the boiler. Still trying to kick each other in the face. And I think it's them, actually, that knocks off one of the pipes.
It's one of the security guards' nightstick that does it, because they do, like, a zoom in to let you know what's about to happen.
Okay. So, whatever the case, that blows up, and it destroys the entire facility. And Oliver Platt comes stomping over. Somehow the roses painting is undamaged. So he says, "Okay, look, I'm going to take the roses painting. and I'm not gonna pay you for it. I'm gonna take it free of charge. You can have your three protesters back, and I hope we can keep working together. JC tells Oliver Platt, no, I don't think we can work with you anymore. And, like, we gotta get a sense that even though JC called Vulture the scumbag of our business earlier, that Vulture's maybe, he's got some respect for JC, right? Like, he's got
some respect for JC. Like, he's clearly a shitty dude.
Yeah, but, like, he sees JC as a professional rival worthy of his attention and respect in a way that Oliver Platt doesn't respect him. He just sees him as a way to make money. So that sort of sets up what comes later in the movie, which is bonkers. Okay, so we know that the MP Corporation has the Dragon Head. And the Dragon Head is set to go up for auction right away. Activist groups have been protesting the sale of these heads at an increasing pitch, which is why the three students got arrested to begin with. And because of these protests, nobody bids on the Dragon Head.
Yeah, one guy literally bids like 10 euros and the crowd applauds him for like clowning the auction.
And so the auctioneer gives a minimum. The auctioneer who has the most like anime dubbing voice I've ever heard.
We gotta get into that. Hey, if anybody out there is doing like movie dubbing, Matt and I'll do it.
For sure. For sure. So the auctioneer goes, we will only take bids at a minimum of 10 million euros. The bidding starts now. The bidding starts and no bids are put in. So Oliver Platt fucking orders his people to throw that dragon head into a goddamn volcano.
Yeah, to a goddamn active volcano. There's also another like weird racist bit in this where you're seeing how this is like new. This is like major news from around the world, and there's like a Greek reporter who's standing in front of the Parthenon, and then a reporter speaking in Arabic who's standing in front of the pyramids. That shit's fucked up. But yeah, the main thing, Oliver Platt is like, if nobody buys this, I'm throwing it in a fucking volcano.
Yeah. I suppose to increase the value of the other dragon heads, or the other zodiac heads, or something. I don't know.
It's part, like, I think that might, I think that's how they're trying to justify it, but there's also, like, a weird thing of, like, where he's like, yeah, fuck you. When he gets the words like, hey, yeah, it's been taken off auction, no bids. He's like, throw it in! Like, he does like a, he's a very big fuck you to the,
But like, it's also so dramatic, right? Because they could have just put the fucking thing in an incinerator. They could have melted it. But instead, they have to throw it into a volcano. So a plane flies over this active volcano, and three of Oliver Platt's henchmen, including the Vulture.
It's Vulture and Katie and one other guy who we have no idea who that is.
Yeah, somebody who is really into Katie, apparently, because they jump out with the dragon head, and they are going to guide the head into the volcano and then parachute and get out of there.
Yeah, which, I don't know a lot about volcanoes, and I know very little about skydiving, but I would think the thermals would make that a pretty challenging disposal of a priceless artifact.
And yet, Vulture and Katie and the other guy seem stoked to be doing this.
Yeah.
So they're falling toward the volcano, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, as one of the reporters covering this event says, another skydiver. And it's JC. He's wearing white. The other three are wearing black, so we can identify them from each other. There's a little bit of like a fight in the air, but JC manages to get the dragon head away. And
there's no plane, by the way. Like, we do not see the plane that drops Jackie.
No.
Like, he just shows up like he's fucking Iron Man.
And he gets the head, he puts it in a bag. I'm not exactly sure of the purpose of the bag, but he puts it in there. And there continues to be this fight in the air. Somehow, in the process of the fight in the air, Katie gets knocked out. Jackie has to, like, kind of fly over, well, grab her.
He knocks her out. He takes her helmet off and backhands her with it.
He just punches her in the face? Okay.
He hits her with her own helmet.
Okay. But he realizes what he's done when he does that, and he like, kind of taps her on the face and says, "Wake up, wake up, wake up." She won't wake up, so he just pulls her parachute so she won't fall directly into the volcano and die. He pulls her parachute, and he tells the other guy who's not Vulture, "Hey, go save her." And the guy, like, looks him straight in the face and says, "Thank you."
Yeah, because, you know,
he pulls his
guy, that Jackie Chan.
He pulls his parachute and guides Katie away from the volcano. But Vulture's still out there, so Vulture and Jackie fight a little more in the air. Jackie pulls his parachute, realizes that he's not going to be able to keep the dragon head or something. There's something where he has to release his chute to be able to get the dragon head back. At some point, just before the volcano, Vulture pulls his chute. The dragon head falls off to the side of the volcano, and Jackie falls down the side of the volcano, like rolls down the side of the volcano, like he's fucking Homer Simpson falling down Springfield Gorge.
Yeah, like at one point, Vulture like attaches himself to Jackie, and Jackie has already like pulled his chute and released it, but he's got his backup chute. But Jackie just takes off his harness, so he falls out of the sky onto the side of a fucking mountain. I cannot stress that enough, that this is how this movie ends. Jackie Chan skydives into the side of a mountain. No chute.
And he rolls all the way down. His face is a little bloody.
Well, because his suit inflates. He gets a weird little Michelin Man suit.
He has airbags on him. So when he falls, he only has the protection.
But I swear to God, those do not show up the first time he hits that mountain.
And, like, he's not wearing a helmet. His head is totally unprotected.
Yeah.
But he survives.
I do not know, like, is he riding the updrafts? Like, what is supposed to be happening with Jackie here? Because we see him, and he kind of, like, comes through the smoke cloud and then is basically at an angle. I mean, I guess this is how it works. He's at, like, he's coming down at the same angle as the slope of the volcano, and then he hits the airbag, and that's when he actually hits the side of the mountain. I watched a movie about a talking raccoon this weekend, Matt, and this is the most difficult to believe thing I have seen.
Whatever the case, he reaches the bottom of the volcano and manages to get the dragon head back. He's pretty worse for wear. He's really beaten up. He can barely stand.
He stands up and, like, his ankle snaps, and he, like, falls back down. It's really fucking brutal.
And Vulture parachutes in behind him. Vulture is pretty good shape. And Vulture tells him, like, Vulture kind of takes the dragon head away from him for a second, and then he hands it back to him, and he says, "You know what? You can have it."
He gives him a total, "You're all right, LaRusso."
And the world is so inspired by JC's act of heroism that they decide that they're not going to deal in trading these relics anymore and doing auctions for these relics anymore. So we see a news report the next day when JC's in the hospital that packages have been sent back to countries all over the world.
No, that's all his stuff.
Oh, that's all
Jackie's stuff, because that's the stuff that he stole from the French guy like fucking 90 minutes ago.
Okay, so that's not people who were inspired by JC. That's just JC himself.
Just JC.
Okay. Oliver Platt and his son are arrested because they have the stolen roses painting in their possession.
After the boiler blows up in their forgery operation, Oliver Platt says, like, oh yeah, Interpol was onto this site anyway, so he's already under investigation. But it's the roses painting that they get him for.
And then everything gets wrapped up in a sentence. Simon or David's wife gives birth. Coco and, or no, Bonnie and her husband get reunited with their daughter.
Coco and Bonnie become friends because Bonnie learns Chinese and steals back a priceless painting. Catherine and Coco. Yeah, Catherine learns Chinese and steals back a old Chinese painting to give to Coco.
And JC's wife shows up at the hospital and forgives him because she saw him fall down the volcano on TV.
Yeah, who, by the way, that's Jackie Chan's real-life wife.
There's also an actress playing a nurse who definitely delivers a line exactly like an actor from The Room.
And there's another girl who shows up from the Association of Cultural Preservation who's clearly not an actress. Because she just walks in and says, hi, I'm Anna from the Association of Cultural Preservation. Here's something for our appreciation. And then leaves. And I feel like she is a contest winner. The credits start. And the first thing we get, and I called this about 10 minutes into the movie. I talked about how the at the end of Miami Connection, after the movie is over, you get that epigraph from YK Kim that says, only through the elimination of violence can we achieve world peace. And I was like, Matt, there's going to be one of those, but it's going to be about restoring relics to repatriating relics to countries. And there sure is. And Jackie Chan even, like, gives props to his parents in this. He talks about how important that is. That's thing one. Thing two is we get the standard blooper reel and outtake reel. And, man, there is some sore-looking stuff. It's pretty tough.
There's one with that picture frame thing where it definitely looks like Jackie broke his tailbone.
Yeah, where he, like, he's just... And it's funny because it's one of those things where it's like... It's not like him falling off a building. It's just him dropping like 3 feet onto the floor. And you know it like it's the worst. It's the worst thing. The third thing, and actually the thing that is super dope, is after the outtakes, there is a career retrospective that plays alongside the credits from... I guess throughout Jackie's entire career, like going back to like Half a Loaf of Kung Fu and stuff like that, that ends with the announcement that he has been awarded the Guinness World Record for most stunts performed by a living actor. And there's like a little thing from Jackie where he's like, hey, I want to thank all my fans for all the support you've given me, and positive or negative, I have learned so much from your feedback. Like, and I was like, man, I really feel bad that I'm about to shit-talk this movie for a hot minute. But that part, like, that whole like career retrospective is dope. It will remind you how good Jackie Chan is.
Yeah, there was a moment where we were just like, you know who's great? Jackie Chan.
Yeah, you know who's fucking dope?
All right, Chris, what are our high points of Chinese Zodiac?
The Floor is Lava fight is very, very choice.
Yes.
Because, again, it's so unrealistic, but it's like, oh, this is like, I challenge you to a Jackie Chan movie fight, and then they go for it. It's really, really good.
Well, I would say all the fights in that part of the movie are really good. We observed that if the whole movie had been like the sequence... The entire scene in the MP Corporation secret bunker, it would have been much better. Because the Flores Lava fight is great. The fight between Katie and Bonnie is dope as hell. And the fight between JC and all the guards is really good. Because one thing we didn't even mention is there's this part of the fight where they're in this little studio with a digital camera, and we keep hearing the digital camera snap pictures. And then once that part of the fight is over, JC turns around the corner and he's seeing the pictures that were just taken being printed on one of those big photo printers.
Yeah.
And it's really
clever. Seemed pretty fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
If the entire movie had been like that, like if we had just skipped from the skate suit at the beginning, which, by the way, that's like a thing that a guy invented that he then taught Jackie how to use it for the movie. So if we had just skipped from that to the fight scenes at the end and the plot had been a little more coherent, and I can't, we'll save it for low points, but all that stuff's really good. Also, I told you this while we were watching it, I really appreciated that Jackie is at the point of his career where he's like putting over younger talent, you know, that he's clearly like, okay, you're going to be a big star. You should be in like my next three movies. The other, like Simon and David also have like really good, fun fight scenes. So there's good stuff in this movie.
Low points. I think plot. Number
plot.
One.
It, nonsense.
Like, it's so unfocused. Again, I kind of hate to keep going back to it, but it really is like a 6-year-old is telling you a story.
Yeah.
It cannot stay focused on one thing at any given time. And there are things, just inexplicable things that happen. Like where the character of Catherine comes from, why she decides to help them at the police station and lie to the police on their behalf, who that boat captain guy was. Like, so much stuff happens with that's just out of nowhere. And maybe if we got the longer cut of this movie, it would make more sense, but I kind of suspect it wouldn't.
Yeah, I feel like a longer cut of this movie would just add more weird stuff. Like, nothing in those 15 minutes is going to tie this movie back together, you know? I can't believe I've never said this before. I can't believe I'm saying it now. The low point of this movie is when they go to the pirate island and get the pirate treasure and fight the pirates. Most movies, I think, could be improved by that. Most movies, if there's like just a sequence in the middle where they go to a pirate island, fight a bunch of pirates and blow them up with rocket launchers, that's an additional star onto whatever that movie was before.
The pirate island stuff feels like it's from a different movie.
Yeah, for sure.
Because even though this movie has Oliver Platt saying, like, throw that head in the volcano. Like,
also a high point with this movie gets like fucking buck wild at the end.
There aren't characters that I would say are cartoon. Like, most of the characters in this movie aren't cartoon characters. Every single goddamn one of those pirates is a cartoon character.
Oh, we didn't even talk about how they're taken out by the bees, and then they literally turn into cartoon characters.
Yeah, well, because they get stung by bees, and they swell up like fucking Porky Pig got stung by a bee with big lumps.
Bananas. This movie, you can do a separate movie about JC or Asian Hawk going to find this pirate ship. Like, The Goonies with Jackie Chan is a movie I would fucking watch, I guarantee you. Make this movie about the Chinese Zodiac heads that the movie is ostensibly about.
Like, it really only ends up being about one, the dragon. We don't even see all 12. They only recover maybe 5 or 6.
We see them get 4 of the 12. Which that's not even a quorum.
It's weird, man. Like, the plotting is such a mess in this movie. And it's sort of akin to the problem we had with Robin B. Hood, where, like, there's a lot of stuff going on, like too much stuff going on, and it kind of doesn't make sense. And then the end of the movie is just a big, like, mind fuck, what kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly that format. And it's like, look, we like set pieces, but you don't have to have every set piece in the movie.
All right, let's give our final thoughts on Chinese Zodiac.
Don't watch this movie. But do load it up on Netflix, watch the first 10 minutes and the last 20, and that's a good-ass time. Like, watch everything, like, watch all the skate suit stuff, and then skip everything until they walk into the underground lair. And then watch everything that's in the credits, because it's fucking awesome. But do not, under any circumstances, watch this whole movie.
If you are a fan of Jackie Chan, at least watch those credits. Like,
yeah.
Because the credits of this, like, every Jackie Chan movie has, you know, the outtakes in the credits. But this one, like, the credits feel extra special. It almost feels like a weird, like, you made the joke, did Jackie Chan die while making this movie?
Yeah, like, because I didn't know that it was going to build to the, like, Guinness book thing. It literally just looks like, because you get some narration, he's like, every time I do an action scene, it's like, is this my last scene? Is this the last shot of my life? And it's like, it feels like a memorial.
Yeah.
But, like, it's not, thankfully. And it's got clips from everything. I didn't see anything from Rumble in the Bronx, but it's even got stuff from, like, Shanghai Noon in there.
Mm-hmm.
So watch those credits, and watch the last... Watch the fight with Vulture. Watch the fight between Katie and Bonnie. Like, that stuff's really, really good and deserves to be watched. Just everything in the middle is just a kind of sucky movie.
Yeah, I will say that probably maybe the best thing about this movie is just how we sort of gained an awareness of some of these up-and-coming actors who did cool shit in it, right? And
yeah.
In some ways, that is what Jackie Chan was trying to do. You know, he was trying to give Caitlin Dechelle and Ala Safi and Langchen Shang a platform so people could say, hey, those people are cool, doing cool stuff too. Like, Jackie's doing cool stuff, but so are these other people. So in that regard, I would say that's maybe the strongest thing about this movie is that some people got to be in a Jackie Chan movie and do cool Jackie Chan shit, and he gave them.
Yeah. And hey, if by any chance you're like a Hollywood casting director, cast Vulture. Because he is like a good-looking dude with a really cool look who can hang with Jackie Chan in a fight scene. That dude should be more than Tall Zealot in Doctor Strange. That dude should maybe be Doctor Strange.
Yeah, apparently he's in a movie called American Assassin where he apparently has a pretty pretty meaty role. But in The Mummy, he was Sickle Slave. So yeah. That dude is still definitely just still doing like background stuff, and he's mega good. I will say that at least Caitlin Dechelle was straight up Gal Gadot's main stunt double in Wonder Woman, so she's doing good for okay.
Her. Awesome. Yeah, don't watch this movie, but do watch stuff from this movie. Like, you know, it's 2017, you have Netflix, so load it up and watch some cool stuff. Just, I can't believe I gotta say this, skip the pirate treasure story. It's bad.
Alright, that's gonna do it for this episode of Movie Fighters. We will be back in August with another Jackie Chan movie, Skip Trace, which also features Johnny Knoxville. What's that going to be? I don't know. It's from last year. We'll see how it turns out. Our website was designed by Sean Bogus. Our theme music is by Michael Kill. The Snack Situation theme is by Matt Fisher. We'll be back probably in a week or two with the Snack Situation special and then another movie next month. If you want to follow us on Tumblr, we're at moviefighters.com.